Welcome to a Juno Afternoon. It's Friday, October 14th, 2022. I'm your host, Andy Klein, and thank you so much for sharing your Friday afternoon with us. October is Filipino American History Month, and celebrations and conversations have been taking place throughout Juno. Tomorrow, PhilCom, along with the Friends of the Library, have a special event taking place at the Filipino Community Hall, including food, a film, and a panel discussion with some of the best chefs in Juneau. And on today's show, KTOO's Community Reporting Fellow, Tasha Ilizarde, shares the history and meaning behind Filipino American History Month and will lead a discussion and a preview of Saturday's events with some special guests. But first, we'll have a chat with author and screenwriter Lindy Ryan about the recent release of Trick or Treat, Aleister Gray, as both a book and a short film. Those conversations are coming up on a Juno Afternoon. I hope you stay tuned and join us. But first, we have the spooky business of telling you about the weather. Yeah. Well, showers are likely, and they're going to be happening here this evening. And then cloudy later on tonight with a high near 47 degrees and east winds around 5 miles an hour. Precipitation chances around 60% for the rest of the night. And then a chance of precipitation late tonight is down to about 30%. Then areas of fog before 10 a.m. tomorrow, otherwise mostly cloudy and gradually becoming sunny with a high near 44. Increasing clouds for Saturday night, low around 35 degrees, and then rain for Sunday with a high near 43, rain for Sunday night as well, and a chance of rain and rain for the extended forecast running through Thursday of next week. So rain and highs around 43, chance of precipitation around 80% for most of those days. That's what's coming up in the weather here in Juneau.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akquan. The Kliné Di have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
Hanson Gress, Ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khanakhaya ha anikakh, gunil chish.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein. Yeah, it's getting towards that spooky time of the year. And our first guest is author Lindy Ryan, an award-winning author, editor, and director. She's a professor at Rutgers University and the founder and president of Black Spot Books, whose mission is to amplify voices of women in horror. Her recent book, Trick or Treat, Aleister Gray, is now also a short film. And October seems a pretty perfect month for that film. Lindy joins us now via Zoom today. Welcome, Lindy. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us. I know you were going to come in person, but maybe a sick kiddo or two at home kept you at home. That's fine. This is the modern miracle of Zoom. So it's good to have you.
You know, I'm trying to hand out more treats than tricks this Halloween, I didn't want to bring any germs to the station today.
Very good. Well, tell me a little bit about this. I got to see a little bit of a preview. It's on YouTube of this short film that is linked to your book. So tell me kind of how it all came about. Did you I'm guessing you wrote a book first and then decided to go towards animating it, or how did that go?
Yeah, you know, there's actually a long history on Trick or Treat, Aleister Gray. It started as a poem that I just wrote my son when he was about 4 or 5 years old. And you know, getting curious about Halloween, the way our family celebrates the holiday. And so it became a poem, and then it became a little short book, and then it got some illustrations and became a book. And then film friends and I got together, and we thought this would be a really fun project to develop an animated short. So we built the short, took it out to film festivals, picked up about a dozen awards for the project. And so the book is out now on paperback, ebook, and audiobook, which features the same narrator as is in the short film. So it's been a long project with a lot of interesting twists and turns over the past 10 years or so now.
I can imagine there's so many decisions to make when you're deciding to take a book that you wrote, and then you had an illustrator work with you on, I'm guessing. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And then kind of like, okay, how are we going to interpret that? Is that something, right? So what was your thought process behind when you decided, okay, let's do something more with this? What was it you were, what were you trying to achieve there?
Yeah, well, we started with the illustrator. So Timia is a Hungarian illustrator, and I worked with her when the publisher and I, you know, interviewed illustrators, and I fell in love with her style. It's very Tim Burton, it's very Lemony Snicket, and it really had the visual aesthetic of the story. So we did all that for the book, and then when we decided to animate it, I said, we need to use the same illustrations and really kind of stick to that model. And of course, the illustrations were done for print, not for screen. So we kind of had to go back and recreate them in a way that they could be puppeted inside an animation software. So we knew we had the story, we knew we had the art, and then it was getting the perfect narrator in, and then the perfect animator in to add all those, you know, embellishing touches that kind of make the movement and energy to the story. So yeah, a lot of decisions, a lot of creativity, and a lot of people who just came together to make this project really special.
Yeah, when I was looking at the clip of the short, I haven't seen the whole short, but the clip of it, it did seem to me, see if you think of it, this is fair, but it seemed to me sort of the format of like a book come alive, like the illustrations of the, it still feels like you're opening a book, but the book is sort of moving as you open it.
Yeah, you know, I was always a big fan when I was growing up of like those pop-up picture books,
right?
Where, you know, as you can kind of play with the paper. So when we started looking at the stylistics for Trick or Treat Alistair Gray, I said, I really want that kind of paper feel and that puppetry feel to come into the book and bring it to life. And, you know, there have been several kind of children's picture books that have converted into animated shorts, like Room on the Broom is a great example, that still kind of has that storybook feeling. It's technically an animated short film, but it's also kind of like an author reading aloud a book or a parent reading aloud a book. Like it has that same kind of, you know, personal storybook feel. So
right.
I really love that.
Yeah, it's very cool. And tell me is this fair to say that this is not exactly a departure, but you've also done like true horror, like not fun little tales for kids, but like really like horror.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not a children's book author,
right,
really whatsoever. Like, so, you know, and my whole kind of crowd are horror folk. So this is kind of peripheral, but you know, it's Halloween. Like there's a relationship there. And the narrator, Mr. Sam Sheeran, is a renowned British horror artist. So he's done lots and lots of art for, you know, like your dark metal band and some Clive Barker, Hellraiser, you know, space project. So we're very much horror people. So we definitely had to lighten up a little bit for this children's project. But, you know, it was a lot of fun. We all have kids. We were all once kids, you know, that sort of thing. So we really kind of channeled some of that nostalgia. And our favorite, you know, these folks on this team were people who grew up with, you know, with Goosebumps and Lemony Snicket and Tim Burton projects. And so we just kind of wrapped our arms around that and made sure that Alistair was true to that, but also appropriate
right,
for the picture book crowd.
Now,
yeah.
Is the animated short a production of Black Spot Books?
Black Spot Books is the publisher for the book. So Trick or Treat was produced by Scary Silhouette Productions, which is just a small independent horror film production company. So mostly doing shorts and apparently animations that we came out. So the two have definitely been, worked on by a lot of the same people. And a lot of it has been very symbiotic between the publishing side and the film side.
I'm asking because as we said in your intro, you're the founder and president of Black Spot Books, as well as being an author and professor and all these different hats you wear, and now filmmaker. I was just interested a little bit in what's happening in the world of Black Spot Books, the growth of it, the different what's under the tent of Black Spot Books.
Oh, gosh. So much has happened in the past few years. You know, we founded and started back in 2017, really focusing on producing speculative fiction from underrepresented and marginalized writers in the horror, dark fantasy community. And then we were acquired in 2019 by Vesuvian Media Group, which is a books to film multimedia corporation. So that happened. And then very shortly on the heels of 2019 came, you know, the COVID era. So the silver lining to the world being kind of shut down for a year or so was that it gave Black Spot the chance to kind of pivot and really settle into what it was always, you know, intended to be, which was a horror publishing house. So, you know, we've had a great couple of years at Black Spot. We've produced a number of really wonderful novels, and some amazing anthologies have come out of Black Spot in the past year or two. We had our Classic Monsters anthology, which was a trove of 29 stories that are all reimaginings and retellings of classic universal monsters. You know, your Frankenstein, your Bride of Frankenstein, there's even the fly running around in there, that came out. And we're about to release a project next month called Into the Forest, which is a women in horror anthology of folk tales inspired by the Baba Yaga, which I actually edited. So very excited. That's a little bit over 2 weeks away from going live, and I can't wait to see that one out on bookshelves. So it's been a great few years and all things considered in the horror world of book and film.
Yeah, it's amazing that this is done and you're here in Juneau. I mean, it's a kind of incredible thing, and you're also a professor at Rutgers. I'm guessing a lot of this, or if not all of it, is done sort of virtually.
Vesuvian is headquartered back out of LA with offices in Nashville. We also have an office in the UK. So, you know, we're kind of all over the world, and our team members are as far away as Bahrain. We have an international team. So everyone with the best people from around the world working inside the ecosystem. And I spend about half the year in Juneau, and then traveling for work and other things the other half of the year, of course, getting to campus every now and again, all the way in New Jersey.
So you are a road warrior. So, you have to get out there on the road. Okay.
You know, I just pulled my luggage back out. I'm heading back out here in a couple of days. So trying to get a few more things checked off the list before the holidays and the snow get me at home. Yeah.
I guess the last couple of years for someone like you who is used to kind of living that lifestyle of travel to meetings and all that, the last couple of years, I mean, has really in some ways, it's sort of expanded the world of how to do that in a virtual way.
Yeah, it's been great.
Yeah,
everyone's online, and you know, in the creative space, there's so many people all over the world doing really interesting things, and so having a lot of flexibility in your time and space is really important into that kind of creative process. So. There's been a lot of advancements over the past couple of years that have helped normalize some of those patterns and make things more accessible. So that's been great. And being off the road for a large majority of the time has also been nice, because I get to sit at home and write more and not spend as much time in airports.
And it's funny talking to you, because, you know, you talk to authors, and often they, you know, the thing you hear is, oh, you know, writing is a lonely business. It's a lonely word. It seems like you're networking all the time. It's almost like trying to find time for you to be alone and write must be a challenge.
it can definitely be that way. Writing is definitely a solitary endeavor, but, you know, then you get involved with readers and libraries and bookstores and editors and social media, and it becomes very busy and very conversational. I'm also pretty highly involved with, like, the Horror Writers Association. So there's a network of other writers and other people who are always, you know, interacting and connecting. So, you know, there's a lot of that lonely staying up late all night, you know, coffee pouring through your veins, trying to bleed some words onto the page. And then there's also moments when you're just frazzled. I mean, I've been up since 6 a.m. this morning doing interviews and press for projects. So, you know, there's definitely an ebb and flow, and all of it's wonderful and all of it's terrible. You just kind of embrace it as you go along.
Well, speaking of projects, let's get back to the one that we were talking about here to begin with, the Trick or Treat Alistair Gray. So tell me how folks can, if they're interested in that, how are the different ways that people can either see the film or interact with the project itself, or get the book, or what's ahead, and what are ways that people can interact with this project?
Yeah, well, the book is available in print and ebook and audiobook wherever you buy your books, in independent bookstores, online, what have you. You can grab a copy anywhere. The film is currently streaming on IndieFlix, and it will be coming soon to Amazon Prime. So as we get, I say as we get closer to Halloween, a grand total of 10 days away.
Yes.
But my gosh, it's coming so quick. I'm so very excited. But, you know, you can, anybody can pick up the book in whatever their preferred form is, from whatever bookseller they prefer to buy books from, or check it out online. I also have a subsite on my webpage, which is alistairgraybook.com, that has coloring sheets and some other media for the kids to get involved with as well.
And is this, do you feel like this is going to be a trend for you with other projects? Are you looking more at filmmaking, at animation projects, that sort of thing?
Oh, gosh. Well, I've done two romance films as well. So one of them came out earlier this year. It's called Aloha with Love. It aired May 1st on Up TV, starring Trevor Donovan, who you can catch on Dancing with the Stars if you're a Dancing with the Stars kind of watcher, and Tiffany Smith. And that one came out May 1st and is also available to stream on Amazon Prime. And then I've got another one coming out here pretty shortly. But those are the romance lane, the bright side of my personality. So I'm definitely looking to do more of some horror film making. And I've been, you know, starting to boot up some projects and some really cool things coming down the pipe in the next year or two. So I think I'll be wearing a little bit more of that filmmaker hat coming
it's
up.
It's interesting. To me, it's, you know, at first you'd think it wouldn't be linked, but romance and horror are sort of linked, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely. I always say, and that's a question I get all the time. It's like, you know, you've done these romance, these super sweet, you know, very, very cheesy,
almost
sweet,
idealistic,
you know,
kind of, yeah, right,
yeah,
right.
You know, definitely want your happily ever after,
right,
type romance stories, and then you're over here writing.
Well, there's some conflict, though. There's some
horror.
Conflict in there to begin with. That couple just doesn't quite get together, and then
I know somebody's Christmas tree farm is at stake,
right.
Or their bakery is going to close.
I love it.
Always got to have that conflict.
Well, that's
but
great.
You know, I just told someone this morning. I said, you know, both romance and horror, they the vein of hope runs undercurrent. You know, in both that emotion. And you're writing a love story, you have hope for the future. You have hope for this romance, this relationship. You're writing horror, you're hoping to survive. You're hoping to make it out, you're hoping to conquer. So, you know, I insist that there's this a similarity, but, you know, sometimes it's just a palate cleanser. If it's Friday, that means the newest episode of the British Bake Off is available on Netflix, so I'm about to head downstairs, hop on the treadmill, get a couple of miles in,
right,
watch some Brits bake some yummy things, and then come back upstairs and get right back to writing creepy stuff. My plan.
That's just a day in the life.
Just a day in the life.
Well, Lindy, it's always great talking to you, and boy, you've always got so many interesting things going on. Anything else you want to cover before we wrap up talking to you today?
Oh, gosh. Well, I definitely hope everyone celebrating Halloween this month will check out Trick or Treat Alistair Gray, and I hope you love it. It's super special. I mentioned Into the Forest coming out next month, that Women in Horror anthology. And then I have a new novel coming out next year from St. Martin's Minotaur Books called Bless Your Heart, which is set in 1999 Southeast Texas and follows four generations of women who run a family business to keep dead things buried. So
keep the dead buried. Yes, I think that's a good thing. Well,
it's
we're in the season when you know that doesn't necessarily always happen. Okay, well, Lindy, thank you so much, Lindy Ryan, author and now filmmaker, and doing so many things with Black Spot Books and doing a lot of it here from Juneau, Alaska. Lindy, thanks so much. Always great talking to you. I really appreciate it, and thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Okay. And coming up next, KTOO's Community Report Fellow Tasha Ilizarde and Filipino-American History Month. That's coming up right next on Juneau Afternoon. Stay with us. Welcome back. You're listening to A Juneau Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein with you. Well, October is Filipino-American History Month, and KTOO's Community Reporting Fellow, Tasha Ilizarde, is here with me and some special guests that she will soon introduce. And she's going to lead a special conversation with the awesome chefs that are going to be a part of the panel at tomorrow's special event at the Filipino Community Hall. Tasha, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Andy?
Great. Thanks so much for taking on this really fascinating project and for raising awareness about what this month is all about. And so first of all, just fill us in a little bit about some of the interpretations that you have and some of what you want people to know about what October meanings, the meaning of October being Filipino American History Month is all about.
Yeah, gladly. So as folks know, October is Filipino American History Month. And the reason why it's October versus other months is just because in 1587, October was the month that we have on record that Filipinos first came to the U.S. Now, I do want to know, it's very important to note, that Filipinos only came to the U.S. because of colonization. One, because, you know, at that time, the Philippine Islands were colonized by Spain, and then they had created a trading trade route between the Philippines and Mexico. And so they brought Filipino sailors onto the ships. And one of those ships came to Morro Bay, California, which is how the first time Filipinos arrived on U.S. soil. And then the other thing, too, is like, you know, this was a Voyager trip. It was very much like a trip made for exploration and colonization. So it's important to note all of that. That being said, it is the first time that Filipinos were in the U.S.
That's a really interesting, because I think that most people, without thinking about it, think, oh, Filipino or an immigrant group that came to the U.S. because of opportunity or because of, you know, and it's really, it's so important to actually dig back and find out what true history really is. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that there's this actual deeper history to the history of Filipinos being in America.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that also brings up a good point as to why, you know, I've heard a lot of folks ask me during this month, you know, why isn't it called Filipino American Heritage Month? Like, I thought it was Heritage Month, not History Month. And the reason why it's called History Month rather than Heritage is because it recognizes how Filipino Americans have paved the way for a lot of different, in a lot of different ways. They've really shaped the history of this country. And we're also just like, you know, very distinct from Filipino culture. Filipino American culture is different. And the ways that Filipinos are in the U.S., there's just a multitude of different reasons. And there's like just a lot of diversity within the Filipino group, whether that's from the different islands that we're, or communities that we're from, the different dialects that we speak, different cultures that we share. But the one thing that we do have in common is the fact that we live in the U.S. and are shaping the communities that are here.
Yeah, it's And I think that it's also just the fact that there's being awareness raised about this, you know, all of the contributions that are being made by Filipinos in America is, you know, it's, I think it's something that there's awareness happening maybe within the last 10 years or so that just hasn't been there before.
Yeah, and it's actually really amazing to see, in my opinion. I've been seeing a couple more documentaries and, like, videos, stories. KTO News has been really great about attempting to uplift more Filipino voices in this community, which I've been really happy to be a part of. And just there's, like, a lot of Filipinos in Alaska who do these incredible things everywhere. Again, like, we really have done a lot of work to shape history, whether it's been in Alaska, at least being a part of labor movements, like, really, like, folks risking their lives on the line to be labor movements in the Alaska canneries or in the gold mining industry, working alongside Alaska Native activists for during the civil rights era and still doing a lot of activism today. And we just have a lot of folks involved in many different things. So it's great to see more awareness from other folks outside of the community.
Yeah, and so that's a great kind of primer for the discussion that then let's turn to a fun part of this discussion and an amazing part of the culture, which is, of course, the food culture. We've got three amazing guests that you're going to introduce. So, Tasha, I'm just going to kind of turn the conversation over to you and your guests and let you guys kind of talk through this a little bit. So Tasha, take it away with the introduction to the folks that are here joining us here in the studio.
Sounds great. So I'm actually going to start with one of the folks in the studio out of the three, because we're kind of here today to talk about an event that's coming up tomorrow, a really exciting screening happening. So Rachel Burrill, could you introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Rachel Burrill. I am the chef de cuisine of Invoca al Lupo. And I'm also a board director for the Filipino Community Inc. So what the Filipino Community Inc. did for this month was we teamed up with CBJ Libraries, Friends of the Libraries, and we were able to get the rights to show Ulam. It's a Filipino food documentary. It came out around the time that Filipino food was on a uptrend in just American cuisine in the United States. And we're going to be showing that. We put together a panel of local chefs, and we'll also be serving food.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And what are you looking for? You're going to be speaking at the event as well, right?
Yeah, we have a panel. We've got a bunch of chefs there, actually. Many of them are right here.
Mm-hmm.
So doors open at 1:30. We start serving food at 2. And then I guess we're going to try and do our panel by 3. And after that, we do the documentary showing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm curious about the foods. Do you know what foods are going to be available tomorrow?
Yeah. What are you guys going to be making?
Yeah. Hi. I'm Lionel Udipa. I'm the owner of the Red Spruce Eatery out in Nock Bay. I am going to make a roasted pork belly with some fish sauce, some orange marmalade, and a bunch of fall herbs. Super tasty.
That sounds amazing.
That sounds delicious.
That sounds good. I'm Ames Villanueva Alf. I own Black Moon Coven. And I will be doing arroz caldo. It's a play on my mom. I call it Mama's Penicillin. My mom would always make it for me. But the joy I have when I make it is the way I do the bone broth, because it's not just like boiling chicken, calling it a day, throwing water. There's like very intentional processes in it. And I feel like it also encapsulates like Black Moon too. Because I like being known for the bone broth. So, like, putting them all together with fried garlic and chicken thighs and cilantro and green onion.
That sounds so good.
Yeah. You know, can I just ask a question too, Tasha? I know you're leading the discussion, but each one of you, when you talk, you're cooking so intentional. You know, what you were just saying about making bone broth. I've talked to Lionel before, and we've done dinners and things like that before about really considering every ingredient. Of course, Rachel's amazing work that she does at Boca. So tell me a little – talk a little bit about how you feel like that intention of your cuisine wraps into the culture that you're, that you are kind of trying to bring to people.
No, I love that. That's a great question. And that's something that I feel like now, if more than ever in my, like, career of cooking, even if, like, the dish is simple, there's always this, like, element that I see in it where I'm like, I'm going to do this. And I think that when I – when I opened Black Moon and wanted to have sipping broth be like something that should be normalized as well as like something that should be enjoyed, because that's, I mean, a lot of people are like, I don't know, Ames, like, are you, you're just going to have broth. And it's like, you don't get it. You don't get it. And my process deals with a lot of like, we're roasting and like the long process time and then adding the certain aspects towards the end and the skimming of the fat. It's just, it's so meditational to me doing that. And when I used the bone broth versus how I've seen my mom cook it and what I grew up with, it was like the flavor is just different. There's that roastiness and the toastiness that feels like an imitation umami almost. So yeah, I don't know if that answered your question, but being able to, like, encapsulate your own past into your experiences for future things and present things and being present with, like, molding all of the things is, I think, like, the pinnacle of, like, good food.
Yeah, and I really want to ask you more about that, and all of you, actually. I'm curious about childhood memories and how you draw upon those, because as soon as you said Arroscaldo, I was like,
yeah, I know, I heard
you. Oh, my gosh. Like, because Arroscaldo is my favorite. Well, one of my favorite Filipino foods, because I have memories of my grandfather making that for, you know, all of these different celebrations when I was sick, all these things. It's my comfort food. Mm-hmm. So I want to hear more about, you know, like your experiences with different Filipino American foods growing up and maybe how that shaped the recipes that you make today.
I'm not going to lie, though. I did have a bone broth and butter this morning for for breakfast.
Oh yeah, so yes. Gotta help the joints. I mean, like, nostalgia for me, that's like my food story. Oh, yeah. Always based on,
yeah,
like,
so like, yeah, Filipino food is like the cornerstone of like Filipino culture. It's how we gather, and it's for like family celebrations, funerals, that kind of thing. It's a way for us to gather and kind of reconnect. Filipino families tend to eat dinner at the table a lot, so it's a way to connect
around the karaoke,
yeah,
machine.
So a lot of my memories, there's always some sort of food associated with it, so whenever I smell something or I taste something, it kind of takes me back to those memories.
Yeah, except for when your mom would be frying fish.
Oh yeah, she'd dying.
Be like, close all the doors.
You
doors.
Can tell you're in a Filipino bus when it smells like fried fish.
I agree, but I'm also like, you know, I've gone accustomed to the scent to the point where, like, the only one who's actually bothered by it is my mom and my younger brother, and I'm just there like, oh, I don't care. Yeah, yeah. I don't care.
No, the best thing, dirty kitchen. So you, instead of cooking in the actual kitchen, you have a setup in your backyard, so you could fry out there.
That's so true. My dad does that all the time. Yeah.
Sticking to the walls.
True.
It seems like when I've been able to, I think I've maybe been in all of your kitchens as you're cooking. I've helped at Boca. Mm-hmm. I kind of was a busboy along and kind of helped on a special dinner.
You did well.
And I thank you. I did well.
Nice.
Lionel,
high
we
praise.
Work together on stuff. And Ames, I'm sure we've kind of, we've known each other for so long.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it's, it doesn't seem like the kitchens that you all run are supposed to be like an ivory tower. It feels like they're supposed to be communal. It feels like you're supposed to be, well, you know, they're a place that's the hub and you're welcoming people into it. Is that that's how I felt in those in a time, you know, and that's an interesting thing for me too, because I was definitely an outsider. I'm just like helping out, or and it was like immediately, no, you come check this out. Look what we're doing. Look what's happening here.
Yeah, like be part of it. Be part of it. And I feel like being in so many kitchens and staging in places and working in different aspects of the kitchen, I've noticed that certain chefs will have their standard be so it's a lot of ego. I've worked for a lot of men, and it's a lot of ego in there. And then I've worked for some like other women, and I've noticed that the aspects that I thought of being a chef have definitely changed, and I knew that the community I wanted in my kitchen was community. I didn't want it to be, oh no, you're front of the house. This is back of the house. You're not allowed to talk. Yeah. And I've been in kitchens like that where I'm like, what is happening here? And the number slash like feeling like you're dehumanized now, you're just doing the thing, and yes, chef, and you know, that doesn't work for me. And I knew immediately, like, if I'm going to have a kitchen, this is how it's going to be. Everybody is their own person, and every, like, there's no job that no one else can do. It's not beneath them. Like, you'll see me washing dishes, and I've had a lot of people be like, wait, why? And it's like, because it's the community. Yeah. Everyone is helping.
I think that's something that's kind of uniquely Juneau, though, because it's such a small town. I mean, I've lived down south, and it's hard trying to connect to other people. It's a lot of it's a lot of people, and there's so many different things and like groups to kind of try to associate with. But in Juneau, it's so small. You're going to, if you don't know their name, you're probably going to recognize their face. So there's a lot of like community involvement and just kind of it's something that's unique that I haven't seen in any other state that I've been in, but that's usually bigger, like big cities.
That's really interesting, because at least when we were talking about you know, food being a communal thing, and then this idea of like not having this hierarchy within the kitchen. It's interesting because, you know, I'm not super involved or know a lot about culinary arts, but the idea that like a community and a kitchen is a community, that is such like a natural idea to me. That feels like it should be my assumption. That is my experience with cooking, with food. So to hear having a different experience with all this hierarchy, all this stuff, it kind of surprises me, because I'm just like, that is my experience with food is very much flat structured. You know, you make the food together and you come eat together, all that stuff. So
I mean, a lot of kitchens used to be extremely like militant in their brigade style of hierarchy structure, but it's been changing. I mean, you still have an authority within the kitchen, but it's more collaborative, I guess, in the kitchen, or at least that's the kitchens that I've worked in, so that everyone feels like they have a purpose in that kitchen. I don't know how it's been for you guys.
Yeah.
A lot of East Coast things, right? So.
East Coast? Ooh, we're going to talk about New York and all that?
How about Pennsylvania?
Oh, really? I kind of want to know what the tea is on Pennsylvania.
Yeah, you and I are going to have a conversation.
Okay,
we'll
off the record. But yeah. I'm curious also, Rachel, you mentioned this idea of like Juneau kitchens being very different too. And I'm curious to hear more about that. Like how... I guess I kind of want to hear more about the dynamic between Filipino food culture and this local Juneau, Alaska food culture combining. Like, what's that like?
Well, Juneau has, or Alaska in general, has a lot of Filipino immigrants or people that Filipinos that have moved here a long time ago. And so a lot of the food you'll see in the restaurants, like the Valley Restaurant, they have a chicken adobo or other places where it's kind of worked its way into, like, Alaskan, Juneau, Southeast Alaskan culture just because we've been here so long. It's integrated, and a lot of people are actually familiar with stuff that, like, adobo. And then because of the new trend of Filipino cuisine, it's people are exploring more Filipino cuisine in general. So you're seeing more abstract things, like the ube seems to be really popular right now because of the bright purple.
Yeah. I wanted to throw this out here, too. So Abby Barnett from Zerelda's Bistro is going to be bringing an ube cake with coconut icing.
No.
Yeah, so we have to throw out some love to Zerelda's.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, Abby from Zerelda's will also be joining us also.
Oh, at the panel?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's awesome.
So she'll be, she also said she'll be offering some ube cake. And then I believe also, what is it? Carlos Caldo will be also providing some food.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I'm actually, well, actually, let me take a second to think on what I was just about to say because I forgot. But Ames, it seemed like you wanted to say something. Am I wrong?
Oh, I like this. I like how you know what I'm thinking. This is because I just learned this and I was like, what? So Filipinos have been in America for 435 years, and that's 33 years before the Pilgrims landed. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I never knew that.
Yeah, I just found that out the other day. Definitely shared it on my social media.
Yeah, that's like, there's, and the thing too is, I'm 33 right now. I was having this conversation with somebody. I was like, I don't feel like, I grew up in Juneau. I don't feel like I fully let myself really nourish myself in my culture and in my heritage until I was out of Juneau, until I was in Portland and Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, even more in the past four to 3 years, I've been really, like, digging in deeper into it.
Mm-hmm. Actually, really interested in that. And my older sister lived in Portland for a bit, just fun fact. Portland's a very interesting place for Filipinos, especially, like, Filipino women, I've noticed. But anyways, I love to ask this question at kind of like a beginning of conversations, but I was wondering, like, what regions are your families from, and, like, did you grow up in Juneau, or did you move here from the Philippines, for all of you guys?
Mm-hmm. On my father's side, they're from northern Philippines, so he's Ilocano. My mom is from the Visayas. She's from Calibo, so she's Aklanon. So I got a wide range of different kind of regional Filipino cuisine exposure.
Mm-hmm. Both my parents are from Ilocos Norte, in this small town called Panili. That's where my mom's from. My dad's from Bangi. I was born there and moved to Hawaii when I was 2 years old.
My dad was which island in Hawaii?
Honolulu. Mm-hmm. My dad was working in the sugarcane fields, and then we were there for about 6 months and then moved to Sitka in 88. And
that's when I was born. Whoa.
Yeah. We actually, my dad was here gambling with his brothers. Like they,
nice.
From Sitka?
From Sitka.
Nice.
And then I don't know how about that. I guess they all got talking to moving to Juneau. And
they're just like, Juneau's
restaurant.
Better. There's more gambling here. Yeah. We got the bingo hall. Like, come on.
The bingo hall
they
started up again.
There you go. Yeah, true.
Restaurant. Oh, my. See, this is wild to me. This, like, spider web of, like, Rachie was, I mean, like, the Carrillos have it now. It just, all of it is wild.
It's pretty fascinating. I'd actually like to know who owned it before us.
So that existed?
Oh yeah. My gosh. And my dad was a cook there, and my mom worked the front of the house. Now that I think about it, it's like I was, like, stuck in, like, their love story or...
Oh, whoa.
Whoa. Wait, what?
Okay.
Okay.
I could see that in, like, a Filipino, like, soap opera right now.
Oh, yeah. No, that right there is a Teleserious. That's going to be on TFC the next day. Come on.
Yes. So my dad, Dominador Villanueva, he is from Baguio City. And then my mother, Victoria Villanueva, she is from Nueva Vizcaya, Solano. And it's funny because I just saw them yesterday, and they're like, hey, we're going to go to the Philippines. Can we take your kid? And I was like, take me with you. But yeah, my dad is in the Coast Guard. He was in California and Hawaii. Hawaii was the last place, and then he got shipped to Juneau. And then they were like, we're going to kick it here. And I was a surprise, and they're like, yeah, we'll stay here for a little bit.
That's really interesting. I usually love asking that question to just any Filipino that I meet because I'm like, you can learn a lot from someone's personal history, where their family roots are from, and like, we got a lot of Ilocano energy in the house. I'm also Ilocano.
Yeah.
And so it's always interesting to kind of like hear that. And I'm just curious about, you know, like, I think we touched on this theme a little while ago about, like, this idea of kind of understanding, like, your history and your roots through cooking and through, like, recipe making and all of that. And so I don't really have a question per se on this, but I just wanted to hear more about, you know, if you have anything to say about that.
Well, I mean, when you grow up, you're just eating the food.
But
as you get older, like when I got really into cooking and pursued it as a career, I started really looking into how what influences had on Filipino cuisine. Like, we have a lot of Chinese influence. Spain had ruled over the Philippines for 600 years, so we have a very strong Spaniard influence. The southern part of the Philippines has a very large Muslim influence, so you get a lot of like spices and stuff like that in their region. And then you just gotta look at like their what was available over there. The north tends to be more agriculture, so a lot of vegetables. They also have a lot of more fermentation up there, so you get like the weird funky bagoong, which is fermented shrimp paste, or patis. Patis is like, it's fish sauce. So other cultures have fish sauce too. Colatore is what they call it in Italy, but you start seeing a lot of similarities between all the different cuisines if you like look at the through line by looking at what colony or what who had settled in those areas, who came over and brought their culture and their food to that area. And it influences the food that comes out of that. And then for me, how I use my experience with my culture nowadays is more like I take the traditional dishes and then I'll apply a lot of like the more modern techniques that I've learned. I like fermentation, so recently I learned how to make miso out of peanuts, and I use that in a curry curry dish. And so it's a peanut curry sauce with it's often used with oxtail. So I made peanut miso. That's pretty much.
You want to know what I realized too?
Cool. Like, I can try that.
It turned out super good.
It did turn out super good.
I didn't have to add any like a lot of like fish sauce and bagoong because it already had the umami built in.
Yeah.
That sounds so good.
We just put a kai kai dish on our menu. When I get back,
it takes about a month to ferment, but it turns out super good.
I love this chef talk.
I know. Yeah,
it's the best.
No, it's awesome.
And start comparing. I was going to ask along those questions. Are there other signature dishes that come from different regions of the Philippines as people think about different regions of the Philippines?
I would say yes. And it's interesting, too, because when Reichi talks about the different regions, it's like you have one region that it's more vinegar-based. You have another region that's like, I'm going to add coconut in this. Yep. We're going to add coconut milk. We're going to, like, get it really creamy. And then even the consistencies in itself. Like, if you're like, hey, Ames, what kind of adobo? If you were personified as an adobo, what would you be? It would be more gravy-esque. And there would not be chicken skin, and it would just be chicken. But it's like, I like that gravy.
Yeah.
I don't like soupy
You can tell which part of the Philippines a family came from based on their adobo.
Because
they cook it very differently.
Yeah. So true.
Yeah.
Same with pancit. Go ahead.
I was going to say, my mom's adobo is so dry. Like,
whoa.
Her
roasting
meat,
your mom on
everything
the roasting.
Is so, I love my mom. I love her cooking. But it's like, everything is so dry. And I never really understood that, like, growing up. I'm like choking on this beef that you marinated for, like, 8 months.
I'm sorry, Auntie Yutipa.
But now, like, I'll watch her eat. And there's, like, rice. There's a dry meat. And then there's, like, a broth. With like morungai or something fermented and
but
to
it
eat
makes
it with.
Sense.
Like, but
yeah.
now, like no, that, totally, makes
yeah, that makes
I'm
sense.
I'm like, that's good. Yeah. It's delicious.
But I mean, like that the dry adobo makes sense because there wasn't any refrigeration. It's
right.
It was a tropical area,
yeah.
So you had like high salt, high fat,
vinegar,
high vinegar,
yep.
And just like. No wonder why the adobo, the dry one especially, can just sit on the counter for days.
And that was the thing when I learned earlier. I was like, how did we not? Get sick on
I've definitely
this.
Gotten
it's
sick.
Like,
oh,
yeah,
but like the thing too is if I see other Filipinos and they're like, "What's your favorite food?" They don't have to ask me where my parents are from. And I'm like, "Oh, I like panakbut."
Yeah,
and they're like, "Oh my god, you're ilocano."
Uh huh.
Yeah.
So true.
Or
Dinuguan.
They'll say, "I don't like." But
is anyone bringing that tomorrow?
That's going to be one of the things that's offered up from Carrillo's Caldo. So dinner from Carrillo's Caldo will be available.
Nice. The little bits and pieces.
I'll bring my own bowl.
Dinner is a pork blood stew. So in many regions, you got to use whatever you got. So they did not waste anything. So it's got a lot of the innards, pork innards, intestines, and all that stuff. And it's stewed in pork blood. Mm-hmm. It's actually quite delicious. I would compare it to, you would think like blood sausage, but so much better.
Yeah,
so
it's
much
like
better.
That chalkiness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They call it chocolate meat.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, they do. And I remember growing up, I literally thought it was meat covered in chocolate.
No.
Sorry, just not they. Yeah. We call it chocolate meat.
That one I get. That would always scare me.
It's good.
It's good, but
someone that's never had it before, you just put the food in front of them. They'll start eating it, and then they're like, "Oh, this is awesome!" And then you tell them what it is, and they're like, "What?"
Yep.
And then they second guess themselves after eating it.
That's how I feel when my mom would give me tripe. It'd be like it'd be the stewed tripe with like really really tender meat, and I'm like, "I like this. What is it?" And she was like, "Oh yeah, it's cow's." Cow stomach. I was like, what? It's what?
What?
Yeah. And that also reminds me of, like, the pickling they would do with that. I just, my dad and his whole goat situation, where I'm like, this is pickled goat. Like, did we cook this? And he was like, no, we pickled it. It's fine.
Well, Tasha, we've just got a couple of minutes left. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to let you know as we're getting deep into the chef talk here. It's really fascinating. But I just wanted to let you know that.
Yeah, no, we might have to take the last couple of minutes just to talk about the documentary then, because it is going to be happening tomorrow, and I know, like, I'm really enjoying this conversation. I cannot wait to hear more tomorrow when you guys are speaking on the panel, as well as a couple, well, at least one other person, right? Is it four people in total who are going to be
on? So it'll be all three of us, including Abby from Zarelda's Bistro.
Awesome. Yeah, that'll be so fun. I'm really excited to hear that conversation, and then it'll help prime us for the documentary afterwards, which I know, Rachel, you said that you've watched the whole thing, and then Ames, you said that you watched part of it, so, and then Lionel, you haven't seen it yet, right?
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it'll be tonight. Really... Oh, so you're going to prepare before tomorrow?
Yeah.
Nice.
Can you give us a little preview of what the documentary is kind of?
It features some chefs and Filipino restaurant owners, primarily, from what I could tell, it's primarily California restaurants. And then I think they also covered some restaurants in New York. But it's just, like, about them cooking Filipino food in the United States. And it was a nice... I thought I liked it for the most part. It kind of highlighted how bringing Filipino food culture over here and sharing it is a primary, it's like what that was about, sharing their culture and then trying to like find a way how to make the type of things that they would have in the Philippines, but kind of substituting some stuff in there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just like, yeah, just being a restaurant in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds great. And I'm actually, I'm really interested to hear more about maybe some of the critiques that you're kind of hinting at too about the documentary. Because I know, like, you know, California is very much Filipino central for sure, but there are Filipinos all across the U.S. So that's at least one thing I would love to learn more about, and if y'all have opinions on tomorrow. But correct me if I'm wrong, Rachel, it's at, doors open at 1:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. Is that right? At the Filipino Community Hall. And y'all will start with food servings at 2 o'clock, panel at 3 o'clock, and then the documentary after the panel.
Yeah.
And so tickets are on sale?
Yeah, $35 at the door. We are selling only 100 tickets. You could also reserve your ticket at ecphilcomask@outlook.com.
Well, I have to end the conversation now. We've got to just we just got a couple of seconds to get out of this conversation. But, Tasha, thank you so much for bringing this conversation to us. It's been wonderful to have it. And Rachel and Lionel and Ames, thanks so much for – well, thanks for all the great food through the years. But thanks so much for coming in and sharing some of your knowledge today. I really appreciate it. It's fascinating to be able to listen into the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's it for Juneau Afternoon today. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
All of my soldiers greet me. Hand me bandanas and pull back my hammer. It's warfare when you see me. Skin you alive for my country. I live and die for my country.